The last topic, three weeks ago, was concerned with matrix norms. If you remember, a short recall, the main matrix norms which are induced norms are the one norm infinite norm, the two or Euclidean norm, and finally we mention also the Frobenius norm, because it is very simple to use and enjoys some useful properties. All these, where we have introduced them as induced norms. These norms induced by corresponding vector norms. According to the general definition, the induced norm of A is the maximum over this set of values, or that is the same thing, the same maximum over the set of the vectors with norm 1. In the case that this vector, the corresponding vector norms 1 infinite and 2 are chosen, we obtain the induced matrix norms. The last norm has to be defined apart, because the Frobenius norm is not an induced matrix norm. The Frobenius norm, I don't remember if I have already introduced the Frobenius norm, maybe. Is the square, this is the definition, the square root of the trace of the product A to the H by A. Equivalently, the square root of the sum over all the squared entries of the modules squared of all the entries of the matrix. This is a norm, but as it is simple to see that this can not be an induced norm. Trace of a matrix Z is defined as the sum of the main entries of the matrix itself. Some important things that we have to say. Besides the definition, the main induced norms can be explicitly expressed using simple, more or less simple, formulas that we will call. We will say something more about the tuner. These explicit formulas are the following. For the one norm, besides definition, we can show that the value of this norm is the maximum over the sum of these modules, sum over the columns, for the infinite norm, the maximum over the rows, the maximum over the sum over the rows, I say better. So here is j from 1 to n. And at last, the two norm, for the two norm, we can find this explicit formula where this notation, the Greek letter rho, means rho of the matrix Z, the spectral radius of Z, is the maximum module of the eigenvalues lambda sub E of Z. We should prove these three formulas. We devote some time only for the third, because the two norm, the linear norm, is the most important for us. So we show now, starting from the definition, that the value of the two norm is that square root root of the third form. So we start from the definition that says that this number is the maximum over the values, these values, over the step of vector with two norm equal to 1. For simplicity, let us show n this value. We show instead of the formula of the third formula, the same formula with the squares, both at the first and the second member. We can consider the squares of these quantities, the maximum of the squares, and show that this value is n squared. That is rho of a to the h by a. But the square of the two norm is simply the conjugate transpose of the vector xh by ah by a by x. This is a general fact. The norm 2 squared is equal to the scalar product of the vector by itself. It is a simple consequence of the definition of two norm. But the matrix A to the H by A is Hermitian. So it is diagonalizable by a unitary transform. So we can write that this matrix is equal to U unitary by D diagonal by U 3H. And we can write that this square norm is in effect xh u d u h x. Right? We note that before and after this diagonal matrix, the same vector appears. Y to the right and Y to the H at the left. So if we show UHX as Y, we can write O as Y to the H V. Why? We observe that since the norm of x is 1, also the norm of y is 1. Why? Because u is unitary, the product of a vector or a matrix by a unitary matrix doesn't change the two norm. This has norm 1, this is unitary, the product has the same norm of x, so y has norm 1. At this point, we use the fact that V is diagonal. This is a quadratic form with respect to a diagonal matrix, so it can be written simply as the sum of terms of this kind. D is formed by the eigenvalues of which matrix of H of A to the H by A. Thus we have the sum of terms of the kind lambda sub I by y sub I conjugated by y I for I from 1 to n. And finally, it's the same that sum the modules,
as usually,
the modules squared. Now we show that, remember that this was we have rewritten this quantity. This quantity can be bounded by the maximum module. These eigenvalues are real. And not negative. We can take the module, it's the same thing. We bring the maximum outside the sum, and under the sum, only the square of modules are left. But this is the 2 norm of y. And its value is 1, as we have observed before. So we have shown that this quantity is less than n to n squared. This is the spectral radius of T, but it is also the spectral radius of A to the H by A, because T and this matrix are similar. So we have here m squared multiplied by this norm squared, which value whose value is 1. So we have shown that all these values are less than but we want to prove that this is an equality for some x having norm 2 equals 1. When we want to prove that a number is a maximum over a set, we have to prove two facts: that all the entries, the elements of the set, are less than the maximum, first. Second, that there exists some x for the corresponding value is exactly equal to the maximum. This is the square. But it's easy to find a suitable x for which we have the equality. It is sufficient to choose an eigenvector x corresponding to the eigenvalue which gives the maximum, that is the spectral radius. So let lambda sub 1 an eigenvalue for which the absolute value of the module is equal to
the special rights.
X
qual era?
Di sotto.
No, sotto
di ma.
Deve essere saltata la tonnetta.
Vabbè, quello è un sopra che io dico.
Ma qui è tutto su, quindi no,
diciamo senza luce.
Like XV a corresponding eigenvector, that is
A to the H by A by X equal to lambda sum the 1 by X
with the norm equal to 1. This is not restrictive. We can always normalize an eigenvector so that it has norm 1. For this vector we have that the square of the norm, that is this scalar product, can be written as we have that this product means lambda sub 1 by x and finally we have lambda sub 1, which is n squared by 1. So we have found a vector x which makes the inequality inequality. So we have proved that the two norm of the matrix is related by this formula to the special radius of this Hermitian definite matrix A by H by A. Some other properties of norms which can be useful in the next just two or three properties. If we consider a matrix norm induced, then the norm of the identity matrix must be 1. Why? Because is due to the definition. It's clear that this maximum has the value 1. So, the Frobenius norm cannot be induced by
any vector. No. Why? Because the Frobenius norm of the identity matrix is the square root of f, which is different from 1. The reason why the product by unitary matrices leaves unchanged the two norms. We already know this for vectors, but for matrices, if U is unitary, then the norm of the product is equal to the norm of the matrix A, and this is true also for the Frobenius norm. This is a consequence of the definition for the of the explicit formula. Not for the definition. Since, not only for the definition, since we have seen before that we put the square, so we write less. The spectral radius of this matrix, but U is unitary, so we have again the spectral radius of A to the H by A, that is the norm 2 of A. And also for the Frobenius norm, if you use in this case the definition, you have also in this case we write the square at the value trace of this matrix. Again, U is unitary, so we find again the Frobenius norm of A trace from A to the H by A, that is very particular property. It is a substantially an exercise using an important general fact that must be mentioned regards the relation between norms induced and spectral radii. For Hermitian A, the two norms, according to the formula we have shown before, is formula. A is omission, so we have the square of A. The eigenvalue of the square are the squares of the value, so the special radius of A squared is the square of the special radius of A, square root.
Finally,
I mean, we find that the two norm of Hermitian matrices is simply the special radius of A. In general, we have, without proof, it's very simple, that rho of A is less or equal to a generic induced norm of A. But a stronger property holds, that is the following.
It can be shown.
This is a little bit more complicated to show. We mentioned all the results, we find it on the deductive material. Is the inf over, we can write in this way, over the set of all induced norms of the matrix A. The inf over the set formed by all this value, all the induced norms computed on the same matrix A. It is said in other words that the spectral radius not always is a norm. Is a norm in the case that A is Hermitian. In general, it is not a norm. But according to the definition of inf, for any matrix A and any epsilon positive, an induced norm, we call it the usual way, exists such that the value of this norm computed on A is between the spectral radius and the spectral radius plus S. This is the definition of inf. The last little thing that I leave you as an exercise. Matrix for which a norm exists such that this norm is less than one, then the matrix I plus Z, the identity matrix, is not singular. Not only, and the norm of the inverse can be bounded by this fraction 1 over 1 minus
the norm of Z.
This is for this is this holds for every for any matrix with some norm less than one. See this as an exercise. However, you find it on the book. Let us stop with norms. Next topic is
a survey with the introduction of new methods. Over the methods, the direct methods, for linear systems of equations.
Method direct, direct methods. You all know the Gauss elimination method. We will consider other two important methods, which are
the so-called Cholesky method.
And as third method, the householder method.
Householder method.
We will see later in the next lecture that these and also other direct methods can be seen in a strong relation with suitable factorization. Factorization of the matrix A, and the matrix A in this case is the coefficient matrix of the linear system. Linear system is A by X equal to P. More in detail, we will give meaning to this term, this notation. The Gauss method is related to a factorization which is called LU, or also in English books LR factorization. The Cholesky method is related to the factorization L by L to the H. And the householder method is related to the QR factorization, which is in general the factorization of a mesh. Is simply the possibility of expressing the matrix A as the product of two other matrices chosen in particular sets. LU factorization requires that L is lower triangular with L by II equal to 1 and U is upper. Okay. second factorization needs L again lower triangular with the main entries real and strictly positive. The third Q is unitary and R is upper. Upper triangle with no other assumptions. Before studying in detail this free factorization, we observe that a common property enjoyed by all the factors, the factors as R, L, U, L, Q, R, is that all these matrices, all the factor matrices, all the factor matrices L. If they appear as coefficient matrices of a linear system allow the resolution with O, big O, and to the square, operation, floating point operation, or short flip flops, or less. I mean that if you consider a linear system with L, lower triangular, as coefficient matrix, these systems, you know, that can be solved with backward substitution or lower triangle, forward substitution with above and to the square flops. This is true in all cases, and also better for the third case, because in this case one of the metrics is unitary. If you have 2 u by z equal to, say, z, the solution is simply q to the h by z. That is the product of the conjugate transpose of q by c, which costs again square, because it is the product of a matrix by a vector. So the idea behind this relation between direct methods and suitable factorization is that whenever I can factorize a matrix into the product, say, of two matrices B and C, which are particular matrices of this kind, If my problem was to solve the linear system with A as coefficient matrix, I had planned to solve that problem in this way. First, factorize A as B by C, if this factorization exists. If I am able to compute this factorization, this is the most difficult part of the resolution of the problem in this way. Second, two, at this point, I have B by C by X equal to B. I call C by X Y and consider the linear system B by Y equal to B. That can be solved. I know B, capital, I know small b, so I can solve this system with respect to y and solve in O and to the square, as we have said. Third point, the vector of unknowns was x. I consider this as another linear system that can be solved again in all n to the square. So this is a scheme, quite general scheme of direct method, if the method is related to a factorization. Before I said the heaviest step is the first. Why? Because the cost of all this factorization is O. On to the three. In next lectures, we connect the three factorization I introduced before to the corresponding three direct methods. That's okay. We stop here. See you again Friday. Any question? È una generalizzazione, cioè siccome vedremo, cioè a parte una premessa che dovremmo fare venerdì sul condizionamento che oggi non entrava in tempo di fare, vedremo che queste tre fattorizzazioni non esistono sempre. Esistono sotto opportune ipotesi. In generale la fattorizzazione LU non esiste, a meno che non si consentano scambi di righe, che poi sono gli scambi di righe che conoscete e sapete che si possono fare durante il metodo di Gauss. Se invece di richiedere di fattorizzare A così com'è, come il prodotto di L per U, io allento i requisiti della fattorizzazione e mi permetto di fattorizzare invece di A una matrice PA ottenuta da A attraverso l'intervento, l'effettuazione, diciamo, di scambi. Gli scambi sono rappresentati dalla matrice di produzione P, allora la fattorizzazione LU esiste sempre. Altrimenti, se io gli scambi non li consento, devo aggiungere un'ipotesi, la vedremo venerdì. Sì, cioè dal punto di vista poi sia della complessità che della stabilità, cioè dei pregi, difetti del metodo, Semplicemente è un aspetto importante perché mi consente di affermare che il metodo di Gauss con gli scambi, cioè con le permutazioni di righe, è sempre applicabile, mentre se io le permutazioni non ce le metto, dovrei concludere che il metodo di Gauss non sempre è applicabile. Non è un aspetto di poco conto, però non influisce sugli aspetti poi più delicati, che appunto sono la complessità e la stabilità del metodo. Ok? Bene.